The Klamath River, rising east of the Cascades in Oregon and flowing to the Pacific through Northern California, was once one of the most productive salmon rivers in the West. That changed a long time ago when miles of the river were closed off to salmon by the construction of hydroelectric dams. How to restore those salmon runs and the environment that supported them, either modify the dams with high cost and low guarantee of success, or remove them. The plan to remove Oregon's John C. Boyle Dam and COPCO 1, COPCO 2, and Iron Gate in California formed in recent years, and a recent agreement including the states of Oregon and California appear to put the dam removal project back on track. We'll spend the hour on the issue with several guests. Frankie Myers is the Yurok Tribal Vice Chair. Frankie, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. How are you, Quia?
It's good to have you here. Jim Root is the board president of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, the entity that will gain dam ownership through this process. Jim, welcome.
Good. Thank you, Jeff. Pleased to be here.
Scott Bolton joins us as well. He's with Pacific Power, or Pacific Corp, the owner of Pacific Power, the senior vice president of external affairs and customer solutions. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you.
Richard Whitman is the director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Welcome, Richard.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
And Craig Tucker joins us once again, natural resources consultant for the Karuk Tribe. Welcome back, Craig.
Hey, thanks. Good morning.
So, Jim Root, let's come to you first. The agreement recently settled under, it's a memorandum of understanding among Pacific Corp, the states of Oregon and California, the tribes, and KRRC, the Klamath River Renewable Corporation. What does it call for?
What it calls for is all of the parties who are signatory to the agreement have agreed to a process of immediately filing a amended surrender agreement, license surrender agreement, to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Also, we'll be filing an amended license transfer application approximately January 16th. The co-licensees, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation and Pacific Corp, will maintain that status through the license surrender process, and that's where we find out about requirements that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission will have for mitigation. If all the parties agree to the mitigation terms, then the license will transfer per a FERC order to the states of Oregon and California as co-licensees with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. There are also additional funding that the three parties, Pacific Corp, Oregon and California, will provide to supplement the current funding and agreements for additional funding if needed. The final point is that the Klamath River Renewal Corporation is the designated dam removal entity, as it's been right along.
Now, the additional funding, if needed, does this mean that taxpayers are potentially on the hook in Oregon and California for dam removal?
Yes. The short answer is yes, if needed. The Renewal Corporation believes that there are sufficient funds to accomplish the dam removal and the restoration. The supplementary funds are kind of an insurance policy that FERC feels should be needed, but we really don't plan on calling on that funding.
Mm-hmm. Scott Bolton at Pacific Corp, so obviously FERC still needs to approve this for Pacific Power to come out as dam licensee, is that correct?
Yeah, there's still a process yet to unfold. with federal regulators. And we've been in process with FERC for quite some time, starting with the original relicensing of the dams and now through consideration of the settlement agreement. And, you know, being able to learn from the order that was provided by FERC in July really gave us the opportunity to work with other settlement parties to really refine and adapt to what federal regulators were asking for, and that's what's really reflected here in this agreement.
Jog my memory, if you would, Scott. I can't even remember the year that the licenses were coming up for either renewal or conversion to something else.
Yeah, so the hydroelectric operating license, which the federal government regulates, expired in 2006. So we started in 2004 the process, which is a pretty laborious stakeholder engagement process, started in 2004. The license expired in 2006. We're allowed to continue to operate past that point. And then we arrived at the original settlement agreement in 2008. So it has been a long time that we've all been engaged in trying to find a solution forward on the Klamath.
Frankie, give us a sense of the feelings among tribal members and leaders when FERC said, oh, no, this isn't working the way we think it should in July, and then being able to get to this agreement, which appears to satisfy the concerns expressed in July in November.
Yeah, it's been a real roller coaster since that July order of emotions here for our tribal members. Obviously, the river is the center of our culture and our way of life, and it's a supporting mechanism for our whole community. And so, when the July order came out, there was a lot of apprehension about how we were going to move forward. Going from that to the MOA, I think there's absolutely a feeling of excitement and readiness to move forward, and that we're looking at a brighter future. I think the MOA, when it's all said and done, really puts us at a better spot than we've ever been for truly realizing the dream of a free-flowing Klamath River and moving forward with our Down the Klamath campaign.
You know, just look on the map and look at the Yurok Reservation from Weechpec right to the mouth of the river. It just follows right along the river like a snake. I mean, it's really a central part of Yurok life. But I mean, how productive has the river been in recent years?
Now you make a good point. Back when we negotiated the treaty, our treaties in the 1850s, the tribe and the federal government really put the river at the center of our reservation because it's extremely important. And back then, you had robust salmon populations that we could count on. In the recent years, however, have been really, really low, to the point where I believe 3 out of the last 5 years, the tribe hasn't even had enough for a commercial fishery, let alone a subsistence fishery. And it's been, has a huge impact on our members, on our community. Depending on which side of the reservation you live, we have a medium income of between $11,000 to $20,000. Salmon is extremely important to our members for their daily subsistence, for their nutritional needs. And the last few years, they just haven't been in the numbers for us to actually be able to survive on. And that's huge. Negative impact to our communities, our businesses, our people, our culture, our spirituality. And it's also the direct physical benefit of the river itself. The river is a part of our ceremonies. And in recent years, the river has been so toxic that, we get our announcements that we can't really go in to the river to swim or to pray. And that's been devastating for us as a tribe.
Craig Tucker, a natural resources consultant for the Karuk Tribe. You probably can run the numbers in your sleep by now about the Klamath River and its productivity in the past and what you're hoping to get. How big a deal is it to removing these dams to the flow of the river, the temperature of the water, just a whole bunch of things that all hook together?
Well, it's huge. We have hundreds of miles of historic spawning and rearing habitat upstream of the dams that we want to give salmon access to. The dams create a lot of water quality problems. The toxic algae blooms that plague the Klamath River every summer are due in large part to the dams. A lot of the fish disease issues we see are related to the dam. So it's really going to be a game changer for the Klamath and put us back on the road of recovering with what was the third most productive salmon fishery on the West Coast. And, you know, it's the center of Yurok culture, Kotterup culture, native people up and down the Klamath Basin. The West Coast salmon fishery, both in Oregon and California, is oftentimes folks are stuck in port, not able to fish because of low returns of salmon to the Klamath. So it's just such a huge part of this region, such a huge part of the Klamath Basin, and a healthy salmon fishery is really going to change our economies and our culture and everything in the area.
Richard Whitman, the director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, what role does DEQ take, and are there kinds of regulatory approvals needed for the removal of the John C. Boyle Dam, the one of the four on the Oregon side?
Jeff, Oregon DEQ's regulatory role in all of this is to review the water quality impacts of dam removal and determine whether or not the project can go forward meeting Oregon water quality standards. There's a similar regulatory decision made in the state of California. We've already made that decision that was made over a year ago by Oregon DEQ. So our role in this latest agreement really has been with me representing Governor Kate Brown as her representative in the negotiations with PacifiCorps in California and others who are signatories to the agreement. And this really represents the culmination of work by three Oregon governors, starting with Governor Kulongoski and then Governor Kitzhaber and now Governor Brown. It also reflects legislation that passed the Oregon legislature back in 2009 that authorized $200 million from PacifiCorps customers for this work, along with $250 million already committed from taxpayers in California. So coming back to the funding piece, the most recent agreement is a relatively small amount of money committed by the state of California, the state of Oregon, and PacifiCorps to provide an additional contingency on top of contingency funding that's already part of the project in the case that something unexpected occurs with dam removal.
You know, I can imagine that when you got sent as a negotiator for Oregon that you were probably told there are some lines not to cross, but I can't imagine you came very close to any of those. This sounds like a fairly, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how easy or not was it to get to this memorandum of understanding?
Well, I think the key thing, I really have to credit PacifiCorps here. The key thing, and also KRRC, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, for the last several years, there's been a lot of due diligence work going on to examine what the cost of dam removal will be. We're now at what's called a 90% design by one of the nation's leading contractors looking at the project. So we have a much higher level of certainty that the project can be completed within budget without ever touching this additional funding. And I think in part because of that due diligence in part because of the desire to be a good partner, PacifiCorps signaled they're ready to be all in on this project. And once we had that strong signal from PacifiCorps, I think the two states were absolutely ready to be there with committing to be partners with KRC in getting this done. That always was anticipated. But it's really the due diligence work that KRC has done over the last several years that made it possible for all the parties, including the tribes, to come together and get this done.
Now, the KRRC obviously was created as the new entity to own the dams and to manage the process of removal. Coming back to this point, Scott Bolton, was there a long and heated discussion within PacifiCorp?
Well, I think... we've been in the settlement agreement, as I mentioned earlier, for a long time. We've been planning for this outcome. And I think PacifiCorp has been and continues to be a pretty faithful adherent to the Klamath Hydro Settlement Agreement. I think what happened in July was when federal regulators, really did throw a bit of a kink in the process by accepting some parts of the agreement and not accepting others. And I think one of the things that has changed and evolved, and as Richard just mentioned, is there's a lot more understanding now. We have a better sense of what federal regulators really want to see, and they want to see more confidence that this is going to happen, that the parties involved are going to see it through. I think that's helped enormously by the states of California and Oregon stepping up and effectively joining this process alongside the KARRC. I think that is a signal of commitment that has strengthened the agreement. I also think that adding to the contingency funding and ensuring that this isn't a limited amount of money, but that again, projects sometimes take longer, sometimes unforeseen things happen. And I think federal regulators wanted to be assured that the parties would stick with it in those contingencies. And again, I think the memorandum of agreement addresses that. So, it was definitely a process to work with other parties, all of whom, modified and adapted from where we were prior to July. And I think it is a testament to the partnership that has grown. And frankly, the balancing of interests, because there are parties who aren't represented here, but who absolutely have a stake and could wear the outcome if we can't get this right. And so really trying to take all that in and find the best balance to achieve this outcome is really the work that took a couple months to get through, but we're here, and I think we are proud to be here.
We are talking about the potential for removal of four dams from the Klamath River, the plan now moving ahead once again with a memorandum of agreement between the states of Oregon and California and the other parties to the original Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, KHSA. We can get really caught up in acronyms here, but the point is this: four dams, three in California, one in Oregon, on track for removal once again. We're talking to Frankie Myers, the Yurok Tribal Vice Chair, Jim Root, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation Board President, Scott Bolton, you just heard, is Senior Vice President of External Affairs and Customer Solutions at PacifiCorp, which currently owns the dams. Richard Whitman is the Director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and the negotiator for the state of Oregon. Craig Tucker, Natural Resources Consultant for the Karuk Tribe. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions and comments about this long, long process, welcome on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a phone call from Skeeter in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hiya. Thanks. I'm really in support of the dams being taken out and letting the river flow freely. And I also remember seeing a documentary about 45 years ago showing examples of water power in southern Oregon, both using low-head hydro, such as Pelton wheels, sawmill using a water wheel. I'm curious about whether or not any of that is either happening now or potentially going to happen, the feasibility of still using the energy of the river to help all of us. And on a side note, beavers are being reintroduced to some areas to help improve the watersheds in various areas, but it's controversial as well. And I'm curious if you all might be able to address that. And thank you all so much for what you're doing.
Thank you, Skeeter. Well, so a hydro and beavers. Let me give the hydro part to Scott Bolton. Is Pacific Corporation essentially walking away from the Klamath River, or are there still some plans to do some sort of lower impact hydro or something there?
At this time, it really is about decommissioning and the removal of these structures on the river. And two of the four dams that we're talking about, do create reservoirs. They do have quite a bit of impoundment behind them. So, it's a different technology. It's a different use of the river. I think the caller's describing. Certainly, we value hydropower. We have successfully relicensed our entire hydro fleet. This is really the one hydro project that just is incompatible, I think, with where many stakeholders in the states want to see the future of the river going. But we do own and operate great hydro facilities that have been modified and have adapted to new environmental conditions on the Rogue River, on the Umpqua, on the Lewis River in Washington, and we're proud to be a good steward of those resources.
So I want to come to the beaver part of Skeeter's question, and Craig Tucker, I wonder if that's been discussed at all with within your offices or between the tribes or anything.
Yeah, well, we really learned that beaver and coho salmon really go hand in hand. So coho are the species of salmon that are listed as threatened under your endangered species list, and beaver ponds are where juvenile coho rear, grow healthy, and get ready to go out to sea. So we've done a lot of work in the Middle Klamath and Lower Klamath to protect beaver habitat. We're advocating for not issuing depredation permits for beavers in places like the Scott Valley, because we really do see beavers and coho salmon kind of going hand in hand, and they all share that ecosystem together. So Skeeter's spot on with the comment, and beavers are going to play a huge role in the future in restoring salmon.
We have an email here from Randy and Roo. She writes, "My understanding of the dam removal objective is to help restore salmon to the upper Klamath drainage. What I'm not clear about is that salmon were very plentiful when I, as a young man, commercially fished the coast of Northern California. The same dams that are now slated to be removed were in place at that time. I am a proponent of dam removal, but I'm not sure the removal of the dams will mitigate the problem and bring back the fish due to changing climate and general lack of cold water, or any water for that matter, in some of these river systems." Comments from Randy and Roosh. Frankie Myers, can you go to that that perspective about whether the salmon will come back if the dams are out?
Yeah, and what we've seen even from when I was a young man and from when my father was a young man was a slow, steady decline of salmon populations. At the end of the day, the dam removal isn't the only restoration project that needs to get completed on the Klamath River Basin, but it is the most substantial. I think you have to have fry to have adults, and one of the things that we know has a tremendous impact is that juveniles being released below the dams. The water quality is pretty terrible after it comes out of the reservoirs, and I think removal of the dams, everyone's in agreement, will improve that water quality, increase the survivability of our juveniles, which then in turn, allows for a more robust and abundant return of adult salmon. But it's not the end. I think there's still more work to be done in the Scott and the Shasta rivers. There's more restoration work to be done in the Klamath. And at the end of the day, we've all got to be working towards shifting our global climate change in a direction that's beneficial to humans and all species on this planet.
To that question of water quality that was raised by the email from Randy and Roosh, Richard Whitman, was this a fairly easy sign-off for Oregon DEQ to give a water quality permit for the dam removal process?
Yes, it was not that complicated a decision for Oregon. There will be short-term impacts from dam removal in terms of water quality, and there'll be sediment released downstream that we believe will get flushed out into the ocean eventually. But long-term, as our partners have already indicated, we expect that this action will significantly improve water quality in the river. There are other actions that need to happen to address other water quality issues in the upper basin, and there's still quite a bit of work to do with the agricultural community up and down the basin in terms of improving water quality in addition to the dam removal.
So Jim Root, the board president of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, which becomes the dam-owning entity in essence and oversees the project, what is the process now? What's the timeline?
We are working through the regulatory approval process. The biggest single and most time-consuming effort is getting our NEPA permit. That can be up to a one-year process to go through the biological assessments, biological opinions for the regulators. We expect to accomplish all that successfully. We've already retained our contractors for the project. We're at the 90% design level. We are matching our budget to the design requirements. What we expect time-wise is to continue the regulatory process in 2021. We expect to be doing pre-dam removal activities in 2022, shoring up bridges, road construction, construction of a new water transport line for the city of Waireka, flood-proofing, the various things prior to getting into the water. January 1st, 2023, we expect to be drawing the pools down, which will be about a three and a half month process. And then we will enter the construction phase, which can happen as quickly as 4 months. But we've budgeted a 9 month time frame for a complete removal of the four dams.
Wow.
Then we head into a multi-year restoration of the dam reach of the river.
And what, you know, 9 months, that's an amazing short amount of time for taking out, well, three of the dams are big anyway, and Kopko 2, the smallest of them. But so how, what's the total price tag? We haven't asked that yet, and the human power required to take these out.
With contingencies, Renewal Corporation has $35 million of contingency in our budget. Our general contractor, Peter Kiewit, has $10 million of contingency. Including those contingencies, we're very close to the total budget of $450 million. So we expect to come in somewhere under the $450 million figure.
Let us take another phone call. We have Karen in Mount Shasta on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Klamath Dam removal.
Yes, hello. I used to live near Kopko, not near it, but I visited people out there, and there's quite a community there at Kopko that are fishermen, and they have their docks right at their house. And that's going to be a huge space. And then who owns that space that's cleared off? If it goes back down to just a river, that's a lot of land. And the other curiosity was, does that change the water levels of the river downstream from the dams? Do those houses get higher or lower river levels?
Okay, a couple of good questions in there about water lines and what happens from there. Thanks for those, Karen. Let's see, who best to take this? Craig Tucker, do you have some ideas about properties and basically you own down to the water line, don't you?
Well, there will be a lot of the lands around the project will be transferred to the states for disposition. The question about will it affect homes on the river downstream of the dams, the answer to that is largely no. It won't change the flood footprints or anything like that of the river downstream. And for folks who feel like their property is suffering some sort of economic damage or economic loss, the KRC does have a mitigation plan to talk to property owners about those losses to negotiate compensation. But by and large, those folks who have lakefront property, there's a sign in front of the lake for usually 3 or 4 months a year that says don't touch the water because it's toxic. These reservoirs bloom with a liver toxin. It's a blue-green algae that secretes a liver toxin called microcystin, and it's really dangerous. We know it's in the tissue of the resident fish in these reservoirs. So we're getting rid of that and replacing it with a clean river that'll have salmon and steelhead in it. So we think on the whole, folks will probably benefit with their property values as we complete this project.
And just as a historical sidelight, I know when people were talking about removing the Savage Rapids Dam from the Rogue River, similar concerns about lakefront property becoming riverfront property, and I never heard another word about it once Savage Rapids Dam came out. Let's take another phone call here from Todd in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, this is Todd. I think maybe Craig could answer this question. I'm wondering about how this is going to affect Keno Dam and Lake Iwana behind. From what I've seen, that's a major contributor to the really rotten water quality. It backs up kind of a big, long slough, and I haven't seen much on how that's going to be dealt with.
Let me divert this first to, and thanks for the question, Todd, to Scott Bolton. Is Keno Dam Pacific Powers also?
Keno will be transferred to Department of Interior, to the Bureau of Reclamation, mm-hmm. As part of the overall settlement agreement. And that's been baked in to the settlement as far back as 2008. Mm-hmm. So we believe that piece of the equation will move forward as planned. And, that's not a power generating dam. Mm-hmm. That really serves the purpose of water diversion to assist with irrigation in the upper basin.
Okay, so it's not a power dam, or it's not a Pacific Power thing. And then, so to that end of it, has there been any pressure from DEQ Richard Whitman to make any changes to Keno Dam? It's not part of this removal, I know, but any moves, any encounters between state and Keno Dam about its water quality?
So, Jeff, this is a good example of the additional water quality work that's needed in the Upper Klamath Basin in order to fully recover the salmon fishery and all the other things that go with a healthy river for everybody that depends on the river. And that's going to take work from the irrigation districts in the Klamath Reclamation Project that was just mentioned with U.S. Department of Interior. It's also going to take work by others in the basin, including City of Klamath Falls and some of the industry up there to improve water quality. But Todd is right. There are serious water quality problems in Lake Iwana, and that work definitely has our attention and is part of the long-term effort that's needed in the basin as well.
Now, Frankie Myers from the Yurok Tribe, you had already mentioned additional projects that need to happen. It's not like just taking the dams out will do all the work, but with the whole issue of climate change and potentially less snowpack, I mean, we're talking a very different kind of a river system potentially than the one on which the dams were placed.
No, that's very true, and I think there is other restoration projects. One of the things that I know Croak and Yurok have been working together on, will continue to work on, is bringing fire back to the landscape. I think that's a critical piece of the resource that we have to work on. making sure that we have healthy floors to provide, you know, good areas for snowpack to actually build up, as well as providing more water for the streams. The other one that was mentioned by a caller earlier was really the reintroduction of beaver. I think Dr. Tucker had stated the benefits between coho and beaver. Mm-hmm. It's also a benefit for fire reduction and bringing and increasing the water levels. So I think beaver is going to play a huge role, as well as bringing traditional fire management back to the landscape. And really, in the future, I think that's where a lot of the work needs to get done.
Jim Root, it may look to some people like there's a clear runway ahead of you, but you've got people in Siskiyou County, particularly the Board of Supervisors, who are not happy about this. Are you braced for legal challenges to the dam removal from this point forward?
We are not expecting a legal challenge, but certainly are prepared for it. And I think it would be a shame if we go down that path. Rather, we've been spending a great deal of time in conversation both with the Siskiyou County people who are affected and also the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. We have a memorandum of understanding before each of the counties that the Klamath River flows through. Klamath County in Oregon has signed our MOU. We are in the final stages with Siskiyou County of completing the MOU with them, and we feel like we will get that done. And the MOU does have a non-litigation clause in it. So hopefully we can satisfy the concerns that the County Board of Supervisors have and avoid litigation.
We're down to our last half minute or so, Jim Root. I know you stepped into this as a private citizen years ago. Do you feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel?
I am so optimistic at this stage, Jeff. I feel like the pieces are really in place to get this project completed. And my optimism flows then downstream and upstream from the dam reach. I really think this is going to be a big help for the Lower River tribes. And I feel like this is really going to ignite work in the upper basin on water quality.
All right. So the amended license surrender application with FERC, the next step. We're talking to Jim Root, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation Board President. Thanks also to Frankie Myers, the Yurok Tribal Vice Chair, Scott Bolton from Pacific Corp, Richard Whitman from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and Craig Tucker, Natural Resources Consultant for the Karuk Tribe. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.